Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. It's a Medical Monday, and we're talking about antibiotics. My guest is Dr. Saumil Doshi, Assistant Professor of Medicine with the Division of Infectious Diseases and Chair of the Infection Control Committee here at Howard University. Lines are open if you have a question or a comment about antibiotics. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. India, calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on, India. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to know if the concern is about the overuse of antibiotics. Why do they put so much in the food? Because that's why most people are sick.
Antibiotics in food?
And that's a great question. I think we've had overuse of antibiotics not just amongst humans, but within agriculture as well. And we know that certain farming practices, they give antibiotics to animals. And, we think that what that does is it helps them grow faster. But what this does is it also promotes resistance. So the approach that we need to have is a multi-pronged approach. We need to reduce inappropriate antibiotic use in agriculture, in animals, as well as in humans to help prevent resistant infections.
You know, I must admit, India, this is the first time I've ever heard about the use of antibiotics in food. Obviously, I've heard about growth hormones and the
in
food.
And that's the scary part. Most people don't know.
Mm-hmm. Where did you first hear about that?
Are blind to what's going on.
So where did you first hear about that? The use of antibiotics?
Years ago. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time.
Mm. How?
And that's why if you look at the cancer rates and things of that nature, that's a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything that we're eating. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm glad you brought that up. How safe are antibiotics in food, doctor?
So it's not so much that the antibiotics that is given to cattle, for example, is going to have a direct toxic effect on us. It's more this idea that the more antibiotics that are given, what we're doing is it's a breeding ground for resistant bacteria. And so we just need to reduce the indiscriminate use of antibiotics and only use them when they're actually needed for illness.
India, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I wanted to talk a little bit about antibiotics and the flu. This is flu season. We are seeing a lot of promotions for, flu shots. And, drugstores, our primary care physicians and their assistants, when we go in to see our doctors during this time of the year, they say, have you had your flu shot? What is the relationship between the flu, flu shots, and antibiotics?
So that is a great question. So, influenza, also commonly known as the flu, is caused by a virus, by the influenza virus. And when you have influenza or the flu, antibiotics don't work. They're not going to help make you feel better. But I think one of the best things that we can do to avoid unnecessary use of antibiotics is, in addition to not using antibiotics for infections that are not caused by bacteria, is to prevent infections in the first place. There's several things we can do that. One is using proper hand hygiene. Wash your hands, especially if you're feeling sick. And the second one is to get your vaccinations. Now, the flu shot is a great way to avoid getting infections, and right now is a great time to get your flu shot. And the more people that get their flu shots, the more infections we can prevent, and that way we can prevent people getting unnecessary antibiotics.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Nikki, calling from Suitland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. Let me turn my radio down.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I was calling because I understand that there is a new treatment, experimental, but with some good results of, like, Crohn's disease is caused by some type of imbalance and bacteria in the intestines. And I understand that they do fecal transplants. And my question is basically about when do you use probiotics as opposed to antibiotics?
So there's a lot in that question. So let me just back up for a second. What we know, before we used to think germs were bad, and that's what I was taught as a child. But now what we're realizing is that the human body actually has 100 trillion bacteria within it. In fact, there's more bacterial cells within our body than there are human cells. And these bacteria are actually a part of us. And so every time you take antibiotics, you're actually altering the balance that you have there. And these bacteria sometimes do some important functions, and we're starting to learn about that. When you take these bacteria and you alter that balance, there can be consequences down the line. And like I said, we're still learning about that. But this is yet another reason why we want to use less antibiotics. If you do take antibiotics, sometimes what can happen is you can have these sort of bad bacteria take over, and it can sometimes cause a really severe diarrheal illness called C. difficile colitis. And in fact, this colitis causes 250,000 hospitalizations and 14,000 deaths per year. To get to your question, in terms of probiotics, we're still learning about that, but I think we have to be careful because, like I said, everything also has some side effects. And I think instead of jumping to that, we might be putting the cart before the horse. And I think the best thing to do is to reduce our unnecessary usage of antibiotics.
What is, for those who have heard, and I know I've heard, we've heard it on television quite a bit with commercials and the like, what is a probiotic as opposed to an antibiotic? What is the relationship between the two, if any?
Yeah, so an antibiotic is a drug that kills bacteria. Probiotics are sometimes drugs that sometimes people just say yogurt, you know, has bacteria in it. And the idea is that you're taking it to help replete the normal flora, that's what we call it, the normal bacteria that's within your body. But again, you have to be careful because some of these are not necessarily regulated. And there have been instances where somebody takes that and it can cause infections itself.
Interesting. Okay. Nikki, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. What circumstances, health circumstances, would someone need to take an antibiotic? Can you kind of run through the broad spectrum of why someone would, a doctor, prescribe an antibiotic?
Well, there's the main thing is when you're suspecting or have a confirmed bacterial infection, and sometimes that can be a little tricky, and you know, it's a little difficult to give you an entire list. But there's certain things like there's certain very serious infections like meningitis that can be caused by bacteria. There is pneumonia. There's infections that can cause diarrheal illnesses. But again, all of these infections that I'm talking about can also be caused by viruses, and so. The best thing to do would be to see your healthcare provider, and sometimes they can do tests. Sometimes those, for example, if you have a sore throat, they can do a culture and find out, is that sore throat caused by a bacteria or, like it is most of the time, caused by a virus? And really the best treatment is going to be rest, maybe some Tylenol, and washing your hands frequently so you don't spread that to other people.
I'm going to drill down a little bit more. I have not heard that term meningitis recently. But we do know that you know, there have been times, you know, particularly in reporting on cases of meningitis where the patient does not survive. What is meningitis and how does an antibiotic work or not work where that patient succumbs to the bacteria?
So the meninges is the covering over your brain. And sometimes you can get a very serious infection, and that can cause inflammation of this covering of the layer that's around your brain. And obviously, the brain is a pretty important organ, and when you have that, it can be deadly. But like I mentioned, even meningitis, which is an inflammation around your brain, can be caused by bacteria, in which case you would need antibiotics. And this is one of the situations where you would probably need antibiotics that you would need to give intravenously because the infection is so severe. And sometimes patients who have this type of illness are not able to take oral medications. However, I've seen plenty of cases where this type of infection is indeed caused by viruses. And in fact, sometimes inflammation of the meninges called meningitis can be caused by antibiotics themselves.
Oh, my goodness. So... And one of the other things, and I know that I've had to take antibiotics for sinus infections, but even more importantly, when I had pneumonia, and And I think that there was a question when I had walking pneumonia, which is what, you know, the doctor, you know, called it, was that the antibiotic that I was taking was not as effective. And so I often wonder, you know, how that was possible, because I was severely ill, you know, from walking pneumonia to crawling to, you know, to really just lying in the bed. So when you're talking about, let's start with pneumonia, when you're treating it, how do you know that it's caused by bacteria? How do you know that it's caused by a viral infection? And which of the two is worse?
This actually brings up the question of diagnostics, which is, I think, really where healthcare is going these days. It's figuring out what exactly do you have instead of just guessing. And this is what we used to do. If you had an infection, we'd say, well, it could be a virus or a bacteria. Let's give antibiotics just in case. And now, especially with the advent of new technologies, we have tests where we can figure out, okay, is this being caused by a virus or not? And in terms of which one is more severe, you know, there really isn't one or the other. I've had patients in the ICU, deathly ill from the flu. And I think people just think of the flu as something that causes a little bit of muscle aches. But especially if you're immunocompromised or the very young or the elderly, they can get very, very sick from influenza. And I've seen them on breathing machines. And unfortunately, I've seen them die. And this is why I think something like getting the flu shot is important, not only to protect yourself, but it's to protect the people around you. I know I get the flu shot, again, because I don't want to get the flu, but also I want to protect my children at home, and I get it to protect my patients as well.
Mm-hmm. So, on that particular piece, so can pneumonia be caused by a virus?
Absolutely.
And if so, then how do you treat that? Do you not treat that with an antibiotic?
So in terms, if it's caused by influenza, we actually have specific medications to help treat influenza itself. And so by using specific diagnostic techniques, and I think we need more of these diagnostic techniques, we need more research to go into diagnosis. But after we diagnose that, we can actually give medications to treat what you specifically have and not give you the unnecessary medications and then expose you to all the potential side effects of those drugs.
So with a sinus infection, what is that? And how is that treated with antibiotics? Where does that come from? And I'm talking about that the sinus infection that comes with, you know, specifically behind the sinuses, behind the nose, behind the eyes.
Right. And you know, I know many people out there, and you and I, we've all had sinus infections. They can make you feel miserable.
Yeah,
and
painful, have this pressure, the whole bit.
Exactly. And they can even cause fevers. Most sinus infections are, in fact, caused by viruses. And antibiotics really are not going to do anything. And like I said, it's just tincture of time. And I think what happens is people take antibiotics and then they feel better. And they see a cause and effect relationship there, when really it's just you took the antibiotics and got better, but would have gotten better without the antibiotics as well. That being said, there are certain cases in which antibiotics will help. And that's where your healthcare provider can help differentiate between those two.
Let me ask you a little bit more about that, because I think we're beginning to get into, as part of this discussion, something that I think a lot of people need to know about the treatment of colds, the treatment of you know, infections and the like, even if you get to the old, you know, starve a cold, feed a fever kind of thing. How do you treat a chest cold, for example, if it is viral? Do you just wait it out? Are the medicines that are not antibiotics, the stuff that you buy over the counter, cough syrups, are these treatments just relief, or are they cures, for lack of a better term? Obviously, there's no cure for the common cold, as we've heard. But do they speed the end of this? Your thoughts about that?
So I think the best thing is, if you have the common cold, is to take medicines that are going to help make you feel better. So if you have a fever, you can take medicines to help with the fever. If you feel congested, there are decongestants. If you have a cough, you can take something to help you with the cough, although sometimes the cough is your body's natural way of getting rid of the things that you need to get rid of as well. But really, the most important thing is just rest and, again, washing your hands to make sure you don't spread this to other people. But if you get antibiotics for that, again, all you're doing is exposing yourself to the risks. And what you don't want on top of that cold is to have the side effects of antibiotics, which could, you know, it could be toxic to your kidneys, to your liver. You can get allergic reactions. There's plenty of things. So when you need the antibiotics, they're great. But again, they all can have toxic effects.
I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about those allergic reactions because I've had some as well. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It's a Medical Monday. We're talking about antibiotics. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. It's a Medical Monday. We're talking about antibiotics. My guest is Dr. Saumil Doshi, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Infectious Diseases, and Chair of the Infection Control Committee at Howard University Hospital. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to drill down a little bit more on something that we had spoken about off air. Talk to me about ROAR, this organization that you are a part of here in the D.C. Metro.
Sure. So the National Capital ROAR Coalition. So ROAR stands for Region Organized Against Resistance. This is a grassroots partnership of experts from 11 Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland hospitals. The ROAR members are physicians, nurses, microbiologists, pharmacists, and infection preventionists who work day-to-day to combat resistance in all of our facilities. What we do is it provides critical intelligence that enables more effective detection, prevention, and response strategies against resistant organisms that wouldn't be achievable if we were just working within one institution. So it's really a great collaboration.
So what does that mean for the person who may be concerned about bacteria that is resistant to antibiotics? And how does your organization, this organization, play into informing the public?
So one thing we know is that the world is getting smaller. Mm-hmm. And bacteria really don't respect geographic boundaries, and they certainly don't respect the boundaries between one hospital and another. So what we do is we share real-time experience and information on detection and control of resistant organisms and track data on resistant trends and threats in the area. So for example, if one hospital, a nursing home, notices, hey, you know what, we're starting to see a lot of resistance to this particular antibiotic, or we're seeing some of this particular bug, they can alert some of the other organizations in the area. Now, we're in the Washington, D.C. area where, as you know, we have a lot of domestic and international travel. People are commuting every day between Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. It's a different world nowadays, and we need to have these collaborations because antibiotic resistance is something that doesn't just affect you or me. It affects everyone, and this is actually a global problem.
Speaking of global problems, something we've not spoken about in quite some time, but certainly 2 years, everybody was afraid of the Ebola virus, not Ebola bacteria, but Ebola virus. What have we learned in the past 2 years about infectious diseases, not only as it relates to Ebola, but of course we're talking about, you know, Zika, also a virus, and the role that antibiotics play in giving us the kind of information that we need?
Yeah, so antibiotic resistance, it is a global problem, and international organizations and governments worldwide are taking action to combat it. In fact, in September, the United Nations signed an extraordinary declaration calling antibiotic resistance the greatest and most urgent global risk. Like I said, the world is getting smaller. People are traveling back and forth a lot more than they used to. And resistance that had developed in another part of the world, in South Asia, for example, has now spread globally. There's a bug called carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae. It's actually a group of organisms that are resistant to almost all of the antibiotics we have. And what we're facing now is the threat of infections that are basically untreatable, where we have no antibiotics left to treat them.
So what does this bug do? I mean, and how does it present for people who may have it?
So usually with these types of infections, it affects people that have been in the hospital for a while. So antibiotic resistance is a problem that goes everywhere from the outpatient setting to a healthcare provider prescribing an antibiotic for somebody with an ear infection to somebody who's in the hospital and deathly ill and everything in between. And so with this bug, sometimes if somebody's in the hospital, for example, if somebody is an organ transplant recipient or if somebody's gotten a hip replacement or if somebody just has a pneumonia and they're in the hospital for a while and they're getting different antibiotics. And what that does is it selects for these resistant organisms. The other thing is bacteria are actually promiscuous. And what I mean by that is that these resistance genes can actually be spread from one bacteria to another. So not only are patients moving around from hospital to hospital, from country to country, but these specific genes within the bacteria that are causing them to be resistant can be transferred to other bacteria.
And that brings me to something else. And I'm sure you're familiar with this. Of late, twice in the past 2 months, there's been an issue at Prince George's Hospital where they had to close down the neonatal unit because of a bacterial infection, and it's Pseudomonas. What is that? And how dangerous is it? Because there have been so many stories about this, so many concerns that new parents have had, not only there, but anywhere where there may be the threat of Pseudomonas. What is it, and how is that treated with antibiotics?
Yes, so Pseudomonas is another bacteria that's related to the carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae that I had mentioned earlier. And Pseudomonas is a bacteria that's particularly difficult to treat, and we do have some drugs to treat it. But again, if we keep using these medications inappropriately or if we use them for a longer duration than they're needed, we're not going to have – they're not – the bacteria can learn to become resistant to the infections. And all hospitals and all healthcare centers have had these issues, unfortunately. And what we're learning now is that when these infections are identified, we need to make sure that we contain them. And we do that by several methods. The most important method for containing these infections is washing our hands. Mm-hmm. And that's really for the healthcare providers in different institutions. And there's really a big push for that.
But I don't know how much you are familiar with the Prince George's Hospital Center situation, but the first case, it was in the water in the neonatal intensive care unit, unclear as to where it is the second time. Where does it come from, and how is it prevented? And are children more susceptible to this than perhaps adults?
So Pseudomonas, it does sometimes can be found in water sources, and this is why in any healthcare setting you need to make sure that the water sources are clean, and you also want to make sure that any instruments you're using are clean. And again, the most important thing is really to make sure that everybody's doing proper hand hygiene, especially within healthcare settings. In terms of who's the most susceptible, bacteria such as Pseudomonas or some of these other resistant organisms, it's unfortunately the people that are the most susceptible to these are our most vulnerable. Right? So the very young, the elderly, or people whose immune systems might be compromised. For example, people have had organ transplants. Even severe diabetes, their immune systems don't work as well. People have HIV infection. All of these people are particularly susceptible, but really the bacteria don't care who you are. And this is one thing that I think really unites all of us, because the bacteria, if they're going to infect you, they don't care. They don't care if you're male, female. They don't care if you're black, white, Asian, Hispanic. They don't care about your sexual orientation. So it's really something that I think we all need to worry about, and we need to act now.
So before someone picks up the phone and calls the doctor and says, "Doc, I need a Z-Pak or azithromycin or any of the other things," if you have the sniffles or a cold, or even if you feel the beginnings of the flu, how should you begin to address caring for someone with these symptoms?
So if you have symptoms and you think you have an infection, the most important thing to do is just to discuss it with your healthcare provider. And I know that a lot of people try to pressure their healthcare providers to provide antibiotics. And by the same token, healthcare providers have a responsibility as well to make sure that they don't prescribe antibiotics when they are not indicated. And I think one of the ways that we can all come to an understanding is to realize that antibiotics have side effects, and using them when they're not needed makes it so that they might not work later on when you really need them.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts about the flu shot, and without trying to get too far afield, but certainly every year, I never miss a flu shot. I haven't missed a flu shot in decades.
That's excellent.
Yeah, but exactly. And because no one likes to get, you know, gets the flu. And yet, what do you say to people who say, I've never had the flu and I've never had a flu shot? Are they particularly immune to it, or are they just a flu case just waiting to happen?
Well, the flu is interesting. I mean, in terms of the flu can cause a very, very mild illness where you might not even realize that you had it. Or it can cause very, very severe infections. As I said, I've seen patients in the hospital on breathing machines and die of influenza infection. And I think you should get the flu shot every year for several reasons. One, you want to protect yourself. Even if you're otherwise healthy, you know, if you just don't want to miss several days of work and you just don't want to feel crummy for several days. I certainly get the flu shot every year to protect myself. I want to get it to protect my family. I want to get it in case I'm around anybody who's pregnant. And I definitely tell all of my pregnant patients to get the flu shot as well. Pregnant women are especially susceptible to getting very severe infections from influenza. Most importantly, I get the flu shot because I want to protect my patients. A lot of my patients have a lot of the conditions that I mentioned earlier where their immune systems are compromised. And so if they get influenza, it could be fatal. And I think that we all have a responsibility. Infections are unique in the sense that what we do affects people around us as well.
I think that's a great way to end this conversation. Dr. Saumil Doshi, thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us. And I haven't had my flu shot yet, but I'm going to look into it this week. So again, I appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, November 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, on Twitter at H Fisher WHUR, or on Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.